Welcome to Inflection Point, conversations with women changing the status quo. I'm Lauren Schiller. Today on Inflection Point, Gloria Felt addresses the question, can women really have it all?
Oh, I hate that so much. I hate that phrase. Really, I think it's done more damage than almost any phrase in the English language to women's self-esteem.
Today on Inflection Point, Gloria Felt, founder of Take the Lead Women. Women make up half the workplace in the United States, yet just 18% of leadership. And while women are making gains, at the current rate, it will be at least the year 2095 before women reach parity. Our guest, Gloria Felt, and her organization, Take the Lead Women, is on a mission to cut that trajectory short by teaching women how to actually take power. She believes women can achieve their fair and equal share of leadership positions across all sectors by 2025. Welcome to the program, Gloria.
Thank you so much, Lauren. I'm so delighted to be here.
So tell us, why do you call Take the Lead Women today's women's movement?
I call it today's women's movement because movements go through phases and stages. And the challenge of the 20th century, and I was very involved in second wave feminism then, the challenge of the 20th century was to change laws, discriminatory laws, and to open doors, to give women an opportunity to aim for whatever they wanted to accomplish in their lives. But the challenge of the 21st century is for women to walk through those doors. Because once you have opened them, and once you have laws that make gender discrimination illegal, what's next? Nobody's going to step aside for you. You have to walk through those doors yourself. And that is the lesson that I believe women have yet to learn. And I learned that the hard way when I went into a deep dive of learning about women's relationship with power, which we'll discuss, I'm sure, in a moment. But that's why we call it today's women's moment, because things have changed. We have changed things. And the solution to the problem always changes the problem. So we have new problems to solve now.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about women's relationship with power. What is your point of view on that?
In 2008, Elle Magazine asked me to write an article about women running for office at the moment when it seemed like we were going to have our first woman president. Remember that moment?
Yes.
Yes. And their assumption was that because their role model was there, that other women would be just jumping all over themselves to put their hats into the ring and run for office. Well, it turned out that the real story was women don't, that women are half as likely as men ever to even think about running for office. And when they do, they still have to be asked multiple times before they will finally take that step. I, having been an activist for women already at that point for several decades, thought to myself, oh my goodness, what is wrong? What is happening? Why? Why is it, if you have the opportunity, that you wouldn't take it? And so I started a study, and although I started that study because I was concerned about what was happening with women's not running for office, I quickly discovered that the same dynamics were at work in the corporate world, in entrepreneurship, in who does the laundry at home. The dynamics are the same, and it's all about how we perceive our own value and how we activate that value in terms of the power we believe we have in this world and the intention that we have to use it or not. So I looked at the research. I interviewed women all around the country. I looked, frankly, I had to look into my own heart and soul and my own life and what I had done and not done at opportune moments. And I came to believe that it's not women's lack of ambition, as some of the research says, but rather a much lower level of intentionality that is culturally learned. It's something that boys are still socialized from the moment of birth, and that is, you know, the world is your oyster, whereas girls are still socialized to think first about what other people think about them. That puts the locus of power outside of yourself. So once I had figured that piece out, and I understood, and I came to understand that women, for good reason, have an ambivalent relationship with power, because we have, after all, borne the brunt of many negative aspects of power. Who has been raped, for example? I mean, who has been the subject of domestic abuse, of the power over in the old, what I believe is now an outdated, non-functional definition of power? And when I would talk to women and I would say, but what if we shift our definition of power to an expansive one, one that is about possibility and innovation and the ability to make life better for your kids, I would call that the power too. I would see their faces relax and they would say, oh yeah, well, I want that kind of power. So that's where I started. And then from there, being a practical activist, I went on to develop 9 leadership, what I call power tools, that help women embrace their power, walk with intention, have higher aspirations, and have some very specific tools and tips for dealing with the world as it is, while also understanding that you can change the world.
And is that what you mean by practical activist?
Yes, that is what I mean by practical activist, is I know you can change anything. And most of the time, you know, most of the time when people write books or give lectures about what women can do to succeed, they're telling women how to change themselves. And from my perspective, you have to understand the rules of the game, but partly you understand them so that you can change the rules if they aren't working for you.
Well, this is my question. This idea of the paradigm change for what power means can only go so far unless you have everybody embracing it, because we know that more promotions, more capital, the power is being transferred from men to other men more than it is being transferred to women, especially from those two standpoints of promotions and money. So how do we work with that?
Well, there are several different examples I can give you immediately, one of which is the current proliferation of angel funders groups that are women who totally give their funding to either women-owned or women-run companies. So there are lots of things you can do. I mean, you can invest. When I invest my money, I try to invest my money in companies that, A, have policies that are favorable toward women, B, that have a higher number than the average of women in their executive and board leadership. So those are very small things, but I mean, investing your money is not a small thing. Being an angel investor is a pretty big thing from my perspective. But there are small things that we can do every day. And when you just simply understand the dynamics of the implicit bias that continues to exist in our culture, you're much better prepared to confront it and deal with it when you don't get, say, for example, you don't get that bank funding because they assume that a woman isn't going to be devoting her full attention to this company as they might believe a man is going to. You know how to have that conversation with them, and you can show them the statistics, and the statistics are so incredibly in favor of having women involved. Even if there's not a desire to provide more funding for women's companies because you believe in the justice of it, you want to do it because, frankly, women are a better investment.
What are some examples of that? What are some of those statistics?
Well, companies with more women board members outperform those with fewer board members by stunning data like a 42% higher return on sales, a 53% higher return on equity, a 66% higher return on invested capital. That's just boards. I mean, you know, and that's a small thing to look at. Similarly, companies with just greater numbers of women in their executive staff and or on their boards, they just flat make more money. McKinsey, Ernst & Young, Bain, Deloitte, you can look at any of the big consulting firms. They've all done the research, and they all come up with pretty much the same conclusion, and that is that ad women make more money. Harvard professors have done studies and find that women rank higher on 75% of the leadership skills that are considered essential for success. That study has been done several times now with the same findings. Another study found that when you add women to a group that has formerly been all male, it literally raises the group intelligence. Now, why does that happen? I think it's not just about gender. I think it's about diversity. I think any time you have more diverse points of view around a table, then you are likely to be able to reach better decisions and have a better decision-making process.
Well, let's talk, Gloria, about some of the leadership attributes that you mentioned. I know you contributed to a paper for Femme Inc. That cites some research showing that traditionally feminine attributes are becoming increasingly valued.
Yes.
And that the traditional, quote-unquote, masculine attributes are on the decline. So what are some examples of what's working?
Women, you know, let me start with that study that says adding women increases the group intelligence. They don't know exactly why. You know, these are social research pieces, and there's some things that's really hard to ferret out exactly why is this happening. But what they believe, what the researchers believe, is that precisely because women are socialized to have to be thinking about what other people think about them, that they have a greater, I guess you would call it empathy, a greater ability to read what's going on in the room beyond what's being said, how people are feeling about something. And while we might all like to think our decisions and our actions are objective, quite frankly, all of us, male and female, do a lot of decision making based on our gut. And on our emotions influence our decisions and our thinking and our opinions. So that's one example. It's that you can use, this is my power tool number three, use what you've got. And what women have got is that the value in the same socialization that sometimes causes us to stand back and be more risk averse, at the same time, it also helps us to be more empathetic and more perceptive about what's actually going on in the room. So that's one thing. There are some studies that say women are more collaborative. I think that you can see some examples of that. I don't think that that's it's not necessarily across the board, but in the aggregate, women are more likely to just flat want to get the job done. And so if you take, for example, the last time the government was about to shut down because they couldn't pass a budget last year, well, who was it who finally got a budget passed? The men were at loggerheads. The women in the Senate, and they still just make up 20% of the Senate, but they got together across party lines, and they just figured it out, and they came up with a budget that they were then able to get passed. So women are more likely to seek any kind of position of responsibility, whether it's political or business, because they want to get something done. And men are more likely to seek it because they just want the sheer position and power of it.
Do you think that we'll get to a point where we'll stop talking about, you know, male attributes and female attributes of leadership, and it'll just become one set that's not, you know, this is what the guys do and this is what the women do?
And I think it will happen as women lead the way, and if women will take this opportunity and this historic moment to make this shift from a paradigm of power that is power over, it is oppression, it assumes limited resources, and that there's a finite pie. And it makes you feel powerless, that kind of power. And so if women are able to lead the way to this saner way of living, in which we understand that power is really, it really has no attributes of its own. It's what you make of it. And so we can make it into something positive. And there is no finite pie. The more there is, the more there is. If I help you and you help me, we both have more of whatever resource it is that we're talking about. And women are good at baking more pies, by the way.
Yeah. Literally?
Literally and figuratively.
My husband makes a mean apple pie, I gotta say. So actually, this is a great transition to just talking about this idea of truncating the goal. Or, you know, we're on this trajectory for women to reach leadership parity by 2095. That's according to the World Economic Forum, right? But your goal is 2025. So how do you see that being a reality?
Well, in part, I see it as being a reality because I want it to happen so badly while I'm still alive to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm quite sure I can live to 2025. I'm not sure I can live to 2095. That's highly unlikely. So I really want to see this happen. But to put the joking aside, there's a moment. You know, what did Shakespeare say? There is a tide in the affairs of men. And I think right now there's a tide in the affairs of women, which, if taken at the flood, leads on to victory. And he also said, if you miss it, you miss it. It goes by very quickly. And that I know from movement building for my entire life. If you don't take that moment when it comes, it will go away and you won't be successful in making the change. So I think it really depends on whether we do take the opportunity that exists right now. In an economy that is built on brains, not brawn, and with women having been earning almost 60% of college degrees now for almost two decades, we are prepared. But we have to raise our hands. We have to have the aspirations for ourselves and the intention to take our fair and equal share of those leadership positions. So that's what we work on at Take the Lead. I mean, that's what our learning programs are built around. That's what our Take the Lead Presents role model events are built around, to show women how you can have these higher aspirations, how you can build your best life, a life that you will love, that you will want, that will... I actually never talk about work-life balance because I don't think there is such a thing. I think we make choices every day, but that's, you know, you make choices that give you the life you want. And I am a very optimistic person. I just think this is the moment when these things can happen. And frankly, if you don't put a stake in the ground and try to count up to it, it will not happen.
Well, let's talk about you and your journey and how you've gotten to where you are today with Take the Lead Women. It's public information, and you've told me this in leading up to our talk today, is that by the time you were 20, you had three kids and no college education. Can you tell us how you went from that situation to ultimately becoming president of Planned Parenthood in 1996?
Well, there's a good bit of symmetry there in that right about the time I had my third child, the birth control pill came out. So you're seeing the symmetry already. At that moment, I began to realize, and you know, a change in technology can do this to us. It can help us think in a different way. It literally occurred to me that I could have a different kind of opportunity to plan my life. I could have a different set of aspirations for my life. And I adore my children. I wouldn't take anything for them. But at that time in my life, I knew I had no employable skills. And I was married at the time, but still, I realized if I didn't get a college education, if I didn't find some way to make myself prepared to have a job if I needed to have one, I could not support those children if I was ever in the position of needing to do so. And so I started to college when my youngest child was 4 months old. And it took me 12 years to finish, both because I couldn't go full time with three small children to take care of, but also because I only had access to a community college at that time. And so I got involved in some community service activities, and that got me involved in the civil rights movement, where I had my second epiphany, which was that if there are civil rights, women must have them too. And so I decided that was where my passion was, and I wanted to spend my energy on getting women to have more equality. And I taught at Head Start. That was a great thing. I loved it. I wanted to be a teacher, and I was going back to college when I later had the opportunity to go back to college and finish my degree. And just serendipitously, I was, as a result of some interviews that I did for a class paper, I was invited to submit my application to become executive director of the small, relatively new Planned Parenthood affiliate in West Texas. And I did so not thinking I would ever be hired, because I knew nothing about the movement, and I knew nothing about healthcare management, and I had never been a manager to begin with. But, you know, luck would have it, I was offered the position. I took it. It sounded kind of interesting. I thought I'd go back to teaching in a few years, and 30 years later, I semi-retired as the national president. So, you know, it was a lifetime of saying yes to opportunities that were in front of me, and finding out that each time I took on a new level of responsibility, that I grew and I became stronger. And I think that it's important for everyone. This is a message for both men and women, but I think men learn it a little earlier in life than women tend to, which is that you grow your courage muscles to do things that you thought were impossible, in the same way you grow your physical muscles, by using them, by practicing, by lifting those weights, lifting that responsibility. And so I could attribute it to luck, but it was part luck and part really hard work.
Well, and you also mentioned part birth control.
Yes, exactly.
Do you see a correlation between access to Planned Parenthood? And I'm asking this because of everything that's going on right now in terms of, you know, they have the funding, they don't have the funding from the government. But do you see a correlation between access to Planned Parenthood and birth control and increasing the number of women leaders?
If a woman is going to have the ability to be in charge of any of the rest of her life, she first has to be able to be in charge of her own physical being, her own body, and that includes her childbearing. So absolutely, absolutely. There's just no question. I mean, there are two things that a woman needs to be fully free in this world, to be free and equal, to be able to have equality. And one is to be able to be in charge of your own physical bodily decisions, including whether and when to have children. And the second one is to be able to have economic power and economic justice and be able to earn a living, be able to support yourself. If you have those two things, then you can be fully free. You can't be coerced. You can't be manipulated into anything that you don't want to be manipulated into. And if you're in an abusive relationship, for example, you have the wherewithal to get out of it.
You talked about work-life balance and that you don't necessarily believe in it, but what about this concept that is kind of keeps bubbling up about women, can women have it all?
Oh, I hate that so much. I hate that phrase. I think that's one of the most, I think it's done more damage than almost any phrase in the English language to women's self-esteem.
Where did that even come from?
I'm not sure where it first came from, but I have to tell you this anecdote because I was reading the online version in Vanity Fair of the article on the confidence gap, a big, wonderful article that was part of a best-selling book by Claire Shipman and Caddy Kay. And I'm reading this article, and I'm getting all these great tips about how to boost my confidence as a woman. And you know how when you're reading something online, there will pop up some suggestions for other articles you might be interested in?
Yes.
Well, the other article it told me I might be interested in was called Why Women Still Can't Have It All. And I thought to myself, well, now there's a really good example of why women lose their confidence, because at every turn, we are questioned. I mean, does anybody ever ask a man, how is he going to manage to have a family and a job?
Right.
No. Please. So why should we ask women that? As I said earlier, all of life is a daily choice. Every day we have to make these choices about what are our primary intentions. What is it that we want to accomplish with this one life that we have? What are the trade-offs that we're going to make? And sometimes you might back off a while, and it should be true whether you're male or female. Sometimes you might back out for a little while and spend more time with your family. Sometimes there are caregiving responsibilities for elders as well. And other times you're able to jump in and want to jump in and give it your full attention. We need to move to a system, and this is why I think it's so important to understand we can change systems, not just change ourselves. We need to move to a system of organizations that has that kind of flexibility and recognizes that human beings will always have times in their lives when they need to give more of their attention to caregiving in one way or the other, and times in their lives when they can jump in with both feet. And so we need to be able to utilize the skills and talents of everybody, no matter which phase of their life they're in. And the way to do that is to have systems that have at least enough flexibility to allow people to step in and step out from time to time.
Well, as the founder of Take the Lead Women, I've got to ask you, what's the best advice that you've ever gotten about leadership?
Oh, boy, that is a big and excellent question. An excellent question. I'm going to probably give you two answers. I am going to give you two answers. The first answer I will give you is, and I can't even attribute this to any one person or any one situation, but the many different times that I have learned over and over and over again, the importance of being intentional, of setting the agenda, of knowing what it is that you want to have as the outcome and being willing to own up to that, to be responsible for that. I mean, leadership is also about responsibility, and owning your power carries with it a tremendous level of responsibility. And there's no getting around that. And we're responsible for the outcome, whether it's good or bad or indifferent. And so I think just understanding that the primary function of leadership is in the creation of meaning. And the creation of meaning involves knowing what you want to have happen, even in a simple staff meeting, knowing what you want to make happen in terms of an overall organization. On a smaller level, that actually turns out to be true on a bigger level as well. One of the best pieces of advice I ever had was ask for it by name. I was sort of, this was early in my career, and I was at a training session, and I was asked by someone what position I would ultimately like to hold. And I was kind of mealy-mouthing around, and I didn't give a clear, straight answer. And there was a man there who looked me in the eye, and he said, "Ask for it by name." And it rings in my head all the time.
I love it, the specificity.
Yes, ask for it by name. You can't expect other people to know what you want if you don't ask for it. You can't expect your boss to know that you feel like you're getting ready for that next promotion if you don't tell her or him that and explain why you are, in fact, ready for it and that you would like to have it. They can't know that if you don't tell them.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing both of those with us, Gloria. Thank you for joining me on the show today.
It has been a pleasure.
That was Gloria Felt, the founder of Take the Lead Women. That's our inflection point for today. Is there a woman changing the status quo you'd like to hear from? Let us know at inflectionpointradio.org. And while you're there, I invite you to become a patron of Inflection Point, just like Gina Harman, Pink Pazdar, and Francesca Gutierrez, who are helping bring the voices and views of powerful women to the ears of everyone. And you can too at inflectionpointradio.org. Inflection Point is produced at the studios of KALW Radio in San Francisco and delivered to public radio stations nationwide through PRX. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Our engineer and producer is Eric Wayne. I'm your host, Lauren Schiller.